TSN Hockey Insider Bob McKenzie in studio. How do you like these digs, Bob? This is where you do the podcast
sometimes,
a lot of times.
Sometimes do the podcast in here. This is a home game for me and Mulls.
That's right. Mullen is right in his element.
Esteemed producer of the podcast.
Mulls works on the Bobcast?
Yeah,
I didn't know
the
that.
The brains behind that outfit.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
He hits the record button at the end and
double
stop
dipping.
Record at the other end.
Double dipping. I didn't know that.
I think
big stuff.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Those glasses that he's wearing, you've inspired him. He wants
he's
to be you,
very intelligent.
Bob. He wants to be you. Very yeah. intelligent.
He's going to be too intelligent and highbrow looking for this show.
That's right.
Well,
man.
Jonas is wearing a highbrow sweater today.
Got the nice shawl collar going there.
It's yeah. nice and cozy. It's important in the winter.
It is.
A Wiser's man.
It is. It's a Wiser's commercial
no.
sweater.
Yeah. No. It is.
Like, it,
yeah.
that's it's that you walk in. Like, I expected Mike Johnson to be wearing that yeah. yesterday.
I think I remember Ray Ferraro seeing me after a game when I was wearing this, and he's like, I think he called me, what is it, Mr. Rogers?
Yeah.
yeah. I was like, okay.
Fred, what was that guy's name?
Fred Rogers.
Fred Rogers?
Yeah.
Wow.
You have a pipe that comes with it?
I do have a book.
There you yeah. go.
You're an
fireplace.
Esteemed gentleman.
Leather
very esteemed.
Books. Many leather-bound books.
That's right. Very esteemed. So we haven't really got into the Maple Leafs playing against supreme competition in the big platform
yep.
games. We've been discussing more of the Morgan Rielly story. We'll get to that in a moment. We'll get your take on it. Auston Matthews, what he said post-game, saying that they quit in the third. But, you know, the Islanders game a couple weeks ago was circled all year, and they were brutal. I understand
yep.
back-to-back, backup goalie, all that kind of stuff, the built-in athletic excuses. And last night, you know, there were built-in excuses for a loss, but the effort was terrible, and they got smoked. What's up with the Leafs against these high-quality teams on platform games?
Well, I would say it could be, if they want to twist it the right way, it's a gift. And the gift is that it explains to them how lacking they are in those games against that competition. And that's, I mean, if they were winning the games, everybody would be happy and maybe complacent. They can't afford to be complacent now. They've got one job and one job only. They got to beat the Boston Bruins in the first round of the playoffs. So they've got everything about what they do for the balance of this season. Unlike a lot of teams have, you know, a lot of teams are looking over their shoulder. They don't know who they're going to play. The Leafs, for better or for worse, are almost certainly going to face the Boston Bruins. As Kyle Dubas said in his response to Brad Marchand's troll job,
yeah,
it's greater than 90% probability that we'll be meeting the Boston Bruins in the first round,
great.
Which I thought was the perfect response for Kyle Dubas,
yeah.
and as Marchand's was perfect the other way. So you've got to look at what you're not doing and learn from it. And Babcock has said this on multiple occasions that, you know, these are shining examples of where they're coming up short. So it gives you a tangible thing. We got to figure it out. We got to figure out this. We got to figure out that. And so whether you're the management, whether you're the coaching staff, whether you're the players, there should be some reflection going on here and saying, okay, what are we not doing right against these teams? And you got time to figure it out. That to me is a gift. Because if you were even playing 500 hockey against them and looking like real good a lot of nights, although, I mean, the loss in Tampa.
They played two good games against
Tampa. That was one of their best games of the year, and they lost 4-1, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. That's the last
Well, but like that, even that game, like, it exposed the difference in the two teams. It was special teams.
Yeah.
Like, if you look 5-on-5, they're basically the same. It's Tampa has great special teams.
Yeah. Well, I think Tampa's improved defensively, too.
Tampa's, you know what the big thing is, too? Their second pair, if you want to call it a second pair, with McDonough and Cernak.
Yeah.
Compare that to what the Leafs have, and, like, to me, that's huge.
The gap on the back end.
Bob, I mean, with Tampa, I think it's unanimously accepted they're the best team in the league.
Yeah, although, and I've said this before, I kind of put Boston and Washington on par with them right now, to be honest with
really?
You.
Really?
Mm. Like, not in the sense of points, but if you look at the way Washington's played, I mean, they're the defending Stanley Cup champions. And look at how well they've played the last month or two. I understand. I'm not taking anything away from what Tampa's done. I think, they deserve the tab as best team in the league. But I don't think Boston and Washington are far off from them. And keep in mind, I'm not going to say what happened in October, November, and December doesn't matter. But it's a long way from what happens in March, April, May, and June. And what Boston's done since the new year, and even what they did when they had Bergeron, McAvoy, Chara all out at the same time for weeks, and they've got no Pasternak now, They went down to Tampa recently, and they gave him a lesson.
Well, do you guys buy that whole adversity thing? Like, they've faced, I don't know if I buy this, but, like, nothing wrong has happened in their year.
Tampa, you mean?
Tampa.
Yeah.
Do you buy that that makes a difference in the playoffs?
Sometimes it can. It can, but, I mean, you can also skate right by it. You know?
Right.
The only thing I would say is if it comes at a bad time and you don't handle it well, that's when it tests your room to get it back on the rails.
Yeah.
So if you end up getting, for example, rattled and you get off your game plan and you're taking bad penalties or your top players are not playing like top players because they're more worried about chasing somebody around or something like that, that's where the coach and the core of the room has to get it right back, reeled right back in quickly. And all I think about is the adversity that Chicago, every Stanley Cup team, I believe, has adversity at some point in the playoffs. And I always look for a prime example. When Chicago was down against Detroit and Taze was losing his mind in the penalty
in the box.
And Seabrook had to go over. Like, that to me was adversity. I think they were down 3-2
down
in that.
They were down in the series 3-1, if I'm
they
not
were
right.
3-1,
and I think they might have been down 3-1 in the game.
Yeah,
I don't
it was
remember.
Something like it was not looking good. And to me, there was your TSN turning point where it was adversity. You could go one way or the other.
Well, that's a very focused example.
Yes.
But, you know, from a Maple Leaf perspective, I was asked about this earlier today. I was on with Cause, and we got into it because Cause brought up the idea that, you know, even though this team, they're on pace to break another team record for points. Mm-hmm. You know, like, we're losing sight of that in Toronto, and I think in large part because the expectations were so high and because they hit the ground running so quickly with these young kids a couple of years ago, with Matthews and Marner and Nylander, but they've dealt with real-life issues this year. You know, William Nylander, that wasn't some kid negotiating. That was a business play.
Right.
He sat out and he held the team hostage. You know, you could argue it went both ways, but he said, I'm not coming here unless you pay me exactly what I want, and eventually they gave it to him. Auston Matthews got paid and had to negotiate this year for the first time in his life. Mm-hmm. You know, real-life decision, real-life money. Same thing with Mitch Marner. Now you got the Morgan Rielly stuff from last night. And even though he's been exonerated, it happened. It was heavy. It was deep. You know, in that room, they were all talking about it. You know, they're off today, but tomorrow they're still going to talk about it. And I'm sure via text or if they went out for dinner or whatever last night, it would have come up. Does that count as adversity that can help you grow?
I don't know.
Can this help the Leafs, what they've been going through?
Maybe a little bit. You know, say, you know, you got to break it down a lot of different ways. How much of it's personnel? You can't do anything with the personnel because your team's set outside of calling guys up from the Marlies. So whatever shortcomings they might exist, whether you think it's on the blue line or lack of grit up front or whatever you want to say, you know, what it is what it is. And maybe that will be the fatal flaw versus Boston or Tampa in that situation. But I mean, you can turn around and flip it the other way, too, and say, I don't know whether a lot of the stuff you talked about constitutes real adversity, but you know, when was the last time a President's Trophy team won the Stanley Cup? 10-plus years, I believe.
Yeah, it has been.
Pretty sure it's 10 years. So, and listen, maybe Tampa's a juggernaut, and maybe they're gonna breeze through the Stanley Cup final, though I don't think anybody breezes through the Stanley Cup playoffs. And they're a legitimately great team, but you know, I think Boston's a real good team.
And well, it wouldn't surprise any of us if they lost in the second round to either Boston or Toronto, right?
No, it wouldn't be surprising.
It would be an upset, but like it wouldn't be like a monumental upset. We wouldn't be shocked.
Well, hold on. You don't think Tampa losing in the second round would be a monumental?
Those are top five teams.
Not if it's to Boston.
Yeah.
What if it's to Toronto?
But you know, and.
I think that would
more
be
of
an
a
upset.
Surprise.
Yeah.
But not like a huge surprise.
No, but only because the Leafs, this group still has to prove they can, you know, get out of the first round.
Yeah.
And so, but, you know.
Yeah, I think those would be, like, Boston just is a little bit more battle tested. They've been a little bit further.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Leafs, as I said earlier on the show, I think the Leafs in a couple years will look like Tampa. Having that core played together so many years, to me, everything is just habit for them. So that one would be more of a an upset. If they do it, I think they match up. I think the Leafs match up well against Tampa, but it would be an upset. Like, Tampa's just steamrolling the league.
And to that point, it might be that Tampa's on such a mission now because they are older, because they've experienced their adversity. when we say they haven't faced any adversity,
that's a good point.
The real adversity they faced was last year in the conference final was multiple years. They would say adversity for us was losing the Chicago Blackhawks in the Stanley Cup final. Adversity is every year in the playoffs since then, not getting back to the Stanley Cup final.
Right.
That's our battle tested. That's our adversity. That's where we've learned from. And the reason why we're drilling everybody and we're whatever it is, 15, 17 points up on everybody else in the league this season is because we're on a mission. Because Steven Stamkos and Victor Hedman and Nikita Kucherov and Tyler Johnson and Andre Palat and Alex Killorn and Anton Strahlman, all these guys have this bitter, bitter taste Colburn, in their mouth of, in their mind, failure to win it all. And we're not getting any younger, and we don't know if we can keep this band together forever. So we better get going right now. This is our year. Maybe they are a team of destiny and using that adversity from other years, and what you're seeing is the net result of it is this regular season.
Bob McKenzie, our TSN Hockey Insider in studio. So last night during the game, the mics picked up on the telecast what sounded like a homophobic slur. And then, of course, it got online at some point post-game, and it ran like wildfire. And immediately people were saying, you know, it's Morgan Rielly that said it, and he's guilty. And people ran with it and retweets and likes and all that. And the NHL last night eventually issued a statement saying, we're aware of the accusation, we're looking into it. The Leafs felt like they had an obligation to do the same thing. Kyle Dubas issued a statement last night. We're in Toronto, we're in the bubble, we're on Leafs Twitter, quote unquote. So we picked up on the kind of fury that came with this. From a league perspective, you know, how big of a story was this last night?
Well, it's not the first time it's happened. It's probably not the last time that it'll happen. Hopefully it is, but it probably won't be. Because that's the nature of the world that we live in. And we'd like to think we're getting better, but it's a slow, long, slow process. I think you got to attack this story on a number of different levels. And the first one was obviously on hockey Twitter and on social media, everybody loves to rush to judgment. That goes without saying. So, and it's funny because I listened to it very quickly, and there was something that gnawed away at me where I felt like, that almost sounds like two different voices. And then I talked to a bunch of other people who were listening carefully to the audio, and they said, for sure, for sure, for sure, there's two different voices in there. And anyways, so the league will do its due diligence. But in order for the league to suspend a player for making a homophobic slur, either the player has to admit it, or somebody on the ice, preferably an employee of the National Hockey League, that is a referee or a linesman, needs to say, yes, I heard that. I absolutely 100% heard it. And when you get that situation, then there's going to be a suspension, as there should be. Okay? They couldn't even come close to that burden of proof in this one. And once Morgan Rielly said, I didn't say it, once Brad Meyer said, I didn't hear him say it, and once they listened to the audio and identified two different voices and a bunch of other things that it may or may not have been, it clouded the issue so much that it was an automatic that the league's going to say, We've investigated, and we don't believe that he said it. And that's important. The larger issue here is that out of all this comes a teachable moment. And Kyle Dubas and the Maple Leaf organization understood that from the get-go. That once they took care of defending their guy in his honor and saying he didn't say it, that the I don't want to call it a performance, but Kyle Dubas at the news conference today, that was a textbook handling of explaining why homophobic slurs are as bad as they are. And the disappointing thing for me is on Twitter, and again, it's on Twitter, and I hesitate to use Twitter as a public opinion poll, but it's amazing to me how many hockey fans think that it's okay to say that. Come on, don't be a snowflake, don't be so soft, heat of battle stuff, da-da-da-da-da. And it's not. It's not right. Times change. I'm 62 years old, and I figured out a long time ago a whole bunch of words that we used to use commonly were not allowed to use them anymore because they're offensive and they're hateful. And people, whether they're homosexual or whatever the case may be, they are offensive and they're deeply, deeply offensive, and they hurt people and they make hockey a game that people don't want to be a part of because they're afraid of the haters, if you will. So it's really important to get that message out And I think the Leafs did a really good job of that. And it was easy for Kyle Dubas and Morgan Rielly to do that because they've been on the right side of this for a long time. They've been to Pride parades. They've been with the You Can Play project. This is not some, you know, foxhole conversion in the last 24 hours where suddenly the Leafs are jumping up and saying, "Oh, you know what? We love the gay community." They've gone over and above to do as much as they can on that front. And so, I mean, the rest, as they say, let's just keep trying to be better, everyone.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
Yeah, well, and from Rielly's standpoint, you know, I think a large majority of people are going to move on, and he's been totally exonerated, and that's it, you know. But sadly, some people are probably still going to connect this to him, and I'm with you in terms of Twitter, but Twitter's powerful. You know, as much as we may not want to admit it or we don't want to believe it, Twitter has a power in terms of spreading
things. It's
only
got a power if you're there on it and you give it to it. I mean, you'd be surprised how easy it is to take Twitter off your phone. And what's the sound of somebody being an idiot on Twitter? Nothing if you don't listen or read it.
You're right. But The fact is, this was created on Twitter. You know, without Twitter, this didn't happen. There's no complaint issued, as far as I know, because, yes, the mics picked it up on the telecast, but I don't think somebody in the stands, as far as I know, somebody at home didn't send an email to the CRTC or something, or the NHL, saying, "I think I heard something."
No,
what happened is someone ripped it and put it on Twitter, and then it blew up.
Yep.
You know, so in a way, the power of Twitter was on display because the NHL investigated something based on what happened on Twitter.
Yeah, and I guess that, you know, that's just the technology of social media. And hey, listen, in the quote unquote olden days, somebody might have taken the time to, "Did I hear something there?" and run their PVR back and whatever. But you're right, it doesn't gain as much traction as quickly as it does.
I was saying to Jonas, I think it was off air and even to Brian, but the fact that Brad Meyer didn't react, like, that was one of the things in looking back on it. Because I think, Bob, like you said, the refs and the people around the game now are through education or being conditioned, you know, to react differently. Like, to me, if Morgan Rielly, who he had some choice words for Brad Meyer, he was pissed that he was hooked on the play, and, you know, he's dropping an F-bomb here or there, which it's standard, you know, standard language out there, and that's, you know, that's kind of accepted. But to me, if Brad Meyer would have heard, I'm sure he heard Morgan Rielly using the other F word quite regularly towards him. If he had heard that homophobic slur, I think there would have at least been an unsportsmanlike issued right away.
I can only tell you that the referees, more and more and more at their training camp, are being encouraged to not let these things slide.
Correct.
To not, you know, to not give guys a free pass on this stuff.
You're right, because it's
now,
on them.
Very quickly, because I know we're almost out of time, quite aside from homophobic slurs or racial slurs, like those are the granddaddies of the things you're not supposed to do, it was interesting at the general manager's meeting last week, Colin Campbell basically, it was on the agenda, bad language. Everybody kind of laughed, bad language, you know.
Yeah.
You watch Slapshot? Come on, figure it out. But the message to the general managers was, hey guys, just a reminder, in this day and age, everything that's said, whether it's on the bench or on the ice, it's probably being picked up on a microphone somewhere.
Yeah.
So tell your coaches and your players to conduct themselves accordingly, because you never know when that audio is going to see the light of day. Mm-hmm. So we all love it when two players are in the penalty box just giving it to each other, because it's great. It's great video on television, and it's back and forth and everything else. If the audio of some of that stuff ever made the light of day, and again, it wouldn't be necessary. It doesn't need to be homophobic. It doesn't need to be racial. But it may be so far offside from what normal standards are that if people heard that, they'd be offended by it.
Well, think of Bruce Boudreau. Like, I thought that was, I mean, that's just coach language. Remember Bruce on the 24 hour? He dropped the F-bomb like 20 times.
Yeah.
People were horrified. I
hope you weren't watching him last night when he tried to get the offside call.
He had the tomato head going last night.
Bruce,
like, he was
not
upset.
Happy.
Anyways, that was brought up at the general manager's meeting. And again, I'm not correlating just swearing with a homophobic slur.
Right.
But there was a reminder to all teams, guys, This is the 21st century we're in. Is that right?
That's right.
Is that right,
yeah.
Jonas? You don't think it's smart
guy? I don't know.
You're a trivia guy. Yeah, it's the 21st century. The technology we've got, the microphones, everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it was so difficult to know who said what last night, because there's 10, 15 microphones all around the ice surface, and anybody could have yelled into one of those microphones at the moment that Morgan Rielly was looking at the referee.
That's right. Yeah. Yep. No, that's exactly right. And I think that's a lesson, too. I mean, language and inclusivity and all that is ultimately the most important. But, you know, the mob mentality and pushing it and guilty before, you know, until you're proven innocent, that's scary what's going on with society. But that's where we are in 2019. I don't expect that to change anytime soon either. Good stuff, Bob. We'll
Thanks,
do it
guys.
Again later in the week. There's Bob McKenzie, our TSN Hockey Insider.